I need you to turn to 1 Kings chapter 12. Some of us are maybe a little more familiar with what's happening in the world of technology, the world of AI. Some of us less so, and maybe some of us know almost nothing. But there's an artificial intelligence called AI. It's a technology that's evolving, and it's replacing the need for human input in a lot of ways. And we're going to have to eventually make a decision. Am I going to use AI for my questions that I have? Am I going to look there for the answers? Or am I going to talk to somebody that I know, a real live person, and have some communication on this? How should we know which? When to ask AI and when to talk to a real person? Where does efficiency fit into all this? And I have a question. Who tonight considers themselves an elder? It says AI or elder? I thought with gray hair would come a lot of wisdom and everything figured out, and somehow it seems like that is evading me. But I am at a place in life where I do have a rearview mirror. I can see some things and how life worked out, and do have a perspective on life that AI does not have, research online does not have. And I'd like to use the term elders tonight to, just for clarification, to simply mean not just people with gray hair, but anyone older than us that has a real-life sense to the issues at hand that technology may not have in the same way. Are we going to lean on technology, or are we going to lean on the people that have real-life experience around us? You know, that married 25-year-old has an incredible amount of wisdom for the person that's just turning 16, don't they? They've learned a lot in just those few years till they were 25. One of AI's greatest weaknesses is that it is peer-based. It gathers its prevailing views from the loud, the popular, the recent, the present answers, untested opinion. It's competing with the wisdom of persons. I'd like to read 1 Kings 12 here. King Rehoboam decided to ask for wisdom from two sectors of his kingdom, the ones who were older and had watched Solomon work with the people, and he asked from his contemporaries as well. And he did not err in seeking multiple perspectives, but he erred in what wisdom he trusted the most. Our safest bet at the end of the day is to lean on the advice of people with real-life observation, to back up the advice they give us. I'd like to read 1 Kings 12, starting verse 6. It says, "And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon his father while he yet lived, and said, 'How do you advise that I may answer this people?' And they spoke to him, saying, 'If you will be a servant to this people this day and will serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever.' But he forsook the counsel of the old men which they had given and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, which stood before him. And he said to them, 'What counsel give you that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, "Make the yoke which your father did put on us lighter"? And the young men that were grown up with him spoke to him, saying, 'Thus shall you speak to this people that spoke to you, saying, "Your father made our yoke heavy, but make you it lighter to us"? Thus shall you say to them, "My little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lade you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father has chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions." And we'll stop reading there. The older men spoke from a perspective of knowing firsthand how the human heart responds to kindness. Even the Queen of Sheba was amazed with what she saw with Solomon and the people that were there with him. They saw how kindness bred loyalty and how people would bend over backwards for Solomon. And they said, "You be kind and they'll be your servants forever." But the young men said, "Use fear. Fear is what works. Tell them if they think they had it rough, they ain't seen nothing yet. Start out right. Put them in terror." And we know that Rehoboam listened to the young men, and it led to a northern tribal revolt. and it was not a happy ending. AI or elders, where shall we get our answers? Now I have a question. How many of you still have a paper map or an atlas in your vehicle? Just a curiosity question. How many of you still have one in your vehicle? All right, I see just a couple hands, all right? How often did you use it in the last year? Maybe, maybe not. You know, we've got so accustomed to this thing called a GPS. And we put a lot of trust in whatever that GPS, whatever Google Maps says, whatever's the shortest route. And we pretty much go for it today, don't we? Well, some of us older ones can remember back to early on when there was a lot of caution and we could maybe tell stories about ending up in a cornfield instead of the destination we thought we were going to be at. And it's laughable how inaccurate it was at times. But you know, we kept using the technology. It was fascinating. It was convenient when it worked. And some people believe that today AI is simply some artificial intelligence it's an inaccurate model that, in fact, my coworker asked me that. He said, do you really believe that AI will ever become something that people would actually trust? He said, it just seems like today it's very errant in what it provides answers for, depending what you ask. But I said, yeah, I believe people are going to trust it. It's going to develop just like Google Maps. And it is already able to rapidly answer some very complex questions that do have our mouth hanging open, how accurate it actually was with the information it has already. I believe that AI is going to fundamentally change the way the world works and interacts moving forward, and even the way we work and interact. What will we gain? What might we lose in all this? Well, one of the first questions that might be going through your mind is really, what is AI and how does it differ from a traditional Google search, traditional search engine? Well, with traditional search engines, it gathered information, textual information that's out there, articles of people and whatever, and it brought them to you, and then you could read the articles, and you could see who the author was, and you could determine whether you feel this is safe or something you want to use or discard. You were pretty much in control of what it brought to you. You could take it or leave it. But AI gathers more facts and perspectives, and it thinks for you, and it draws conclusions for you, and it gives you a nice polish, ready-to-use something, whether it took your email and read it for you and made it nicely polished for you and ready to send out. It does tasks, and it thinks. It's not just gathering information. Very interactive, very helpful, very palatable. AI works through LLMs and SLMs. That means large and small language models with tools called bots that are programmed to do specific searches and compilations and narrow down a vast amount of information into something that you say, wow, that's right, I can use that. It's sort of like when humans train bloodhounds, you know, there's a certain amount of effort they put into that dog. And then they set that dog free, so to speak, to go sniffing. And if it was trained right, what that dog brings back is very valuable. And in fact, it'll stand in court if that dog deems you are the culprit. I found it very interesting that they will accept that as evidence in court, that the dog proved that you were the person. And sort of like humans training bloodhounds that are free to go sniffing, artificial intelligence, in reality, is not intelligence at all. It is a human-trained bot that is sent out to gather information, and it works without anybody involved. You're not speaking to anybody when you're typing your questions to AI. There's nobody reading it and saying, I'm going to get an answer to you back. It's computers working. Now, I'm going to try and stay out of the weeds on this, but an oversimplified illustration of how AI works for those of you who don't understand whatsoever, and maybe you still won't, but you know, we have drawers that have stuff in. I'll explain it like this. We have drawers with stuff. You don't know what is in my drawers at home unless you ever came to my house and you looked in them. Well, what's happening today with social media and interconnectivity, people are now showing what's in their drawers. They're posting the videos. They're taking pictures of themselves. They're taking pictures of their animals. They're saying what they think about everything in life and dialogue, and they're putting it right out there on social media and Facebook and Twitter and X and whatever, these digital platforms. And the drawers are now open. Doctors and lawyers and businesses are chatting publicly and sharing information. Churches and mosques and synagogues and Buddhist temples are uploading their creeds and their doctrines. The drawers are being opened everywhere. Wisdom is just floating around out there. And the world is saying, how can we harness this information, all this stuff, all this wisdom that's out there? How can we get it? Well, it's been an effort that's been going on for a long, long time. I think I read from the 40s and 50s already, there were engineers using analog technology, trying to harness this information. Digital platforms were deemed too powerful and too slow, were deemed too power hungry and slow. But today it has evolved to the point that digital has now become what looks to be the future of AI. And it is about to change everything, many things about life the way we have understood it in the past. TMI is being powered up again, Three Mile Island. Do you know that most, if not all, of that power is going to go to power AI? That's why they're starting it up again. Do you know that in Lancaster County, they're making the biggest investment in infrastructure and power generation in the history of Lancaster County to the tune of $10 billion? Because they want to get this AI engine roaring. This information is all out there. They need to get faster access to it so they can harness it. Up to now, the primary limitation was how fast computers can open up everybody's drawers and organize what it sees out there. But my prediction is we will see the accuracy and speed of AI grow exponentially from here on. As this energy gets put into the grid, as the computers become more powerful, it's only a matter of time. And when I say exponentially, what I'm meaning is day one, it can look in 5 drawers. Day two, it can look in 10 drawers. And day three, it can look in 20 drawers. And just double practically every day. An exponential growth, because it's only limited, primarily limited, by the technology and the power grid at this point in time. And that is being developed quite rapidly. Digital processes can now read your pictures. They can read your videos, not just your text. I'll use a pet for an example. You know, people are uploading pictures and videos of their dogs on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and Snapchat and X and all kinds of pictures of dogs, hundreds and thousands of pictures of dogs all over the world are being loaded up and shared with people openly. Anybody can see it. And now what AI is doing is saying, I see these all these pictures of the dogs, and I'm going to read these pictures of the dogs. I've been trained to read this and say, that is a dog. Not only that is a dog, but I can tell you that's a German Shepherd. And I can tell you what the owner of that German Shepherd said about it in the text that was associated with this picture. It's gathering information. It has a digital platform. And that is why artists like myself can then use it as a tool, and I can say I'd like a picture of a German Shepherd jumping a fence with the Alps in the background, and it instantly, within seconds, can find pictures of Switzerland and Alps and German Shepherd and say, here's a German Shepherd jumping a fence just like you wanted. And we stand and we say, wow. And it can do that with text. You can give it an assignment. You can say you wanted a 500-word essay instead of plaguing yourself, and it'll have it just instantly. It's computers at work. It's all it is, computers at work that opened millions of drawers and looked what people put out there and used their algorithms to collect it and put it into a format that is useful for you. AI can find things about Mennonites and Amish and faith and history and the Bible and pictures of buggies and horses in Lancaster County and Ohio, and it's amazing what all it can get right just by all the information that it can go out there and find. It's amazing what it can get wrong, too. I said at the beginning, it's almost laughable at this point, some of the things it doesn't get right. But my concern is as this gets more and more right, and as people depend on it more and more, that we will not be deceived by the answers that AI gives, because we have tuned into that, and we've tuned the elders in our life, the people around us, out. What has the world concerned is these bots self-learn off their own algorithms, and it feels like intelligence. For instance, I read that the bot that was created to ascertain the difference between a picture of a dog and a wolf. So some human being somewhere said, okay, this is how you read if it's a wolf, this formula, and I won't go into that. It's very, very complex, amazing, hard to believe. Just like we used to find it hard to believe your voice can go over telephone wire. Well, now there's bots out there reading these pictures with numeric numbers. But what happened is it was doing very good. It was seeing these pictures, and it was saying, that's a wolf, that's a wolf, that's a dog, that's a dog, and was giving correct information back when people ask. But after a while, it was skewed, and they were like, no, wait, what went wrong here? So they had humans digging into it, and they found out what happened is that it started associating snow with wolf and no snow with dog. And humans hadn't told it that. But it came with, because of all the similarity that was there, its algorithm said, oh, snow equals wolf. And it started playing it out that from that perspective. And this is what has man concerned. They don't know for sure how this is all going to work out. And some people have doomsday cries about it. I'm not here with those tonight, but it is something that can be right and can be wrong. A little reflection from an elder on this exponential development. I'll just share that I started in art with nothing but artist brushes and paint. At age 16, I went to art school, and I morphed into commercial art and lettering. I letter as for my sign shop for my vocation today. But just, I remember the feeling just when I thought I was really starting to master this hand art of painting and lettering. I remember being told that there is a computer now that will, actually it has some sort of knife in, and it cuts out sticky letters and you stick them onto stuff instead of painting. And I remember I was angry inside. I mean, you got to be kidding. Well, surely this won't last. Surely this won't work. And I remember consoling myself, well, I'm a pictorial artist and a commercial artist, so I'll always have pictorial art. They will never have a computer that will be able to paint pictures. That's not as an impossibility. And I remember I felt good after I thought about that fact. Well, at least I'll have that for a trade if this other goes away, the commercial side goes away. And we smile at that today. And I went down in my basement and I asked my printer operator, the fastest machine we had, I said, how fast can this print pictures? He said, 430 square feet per hour. And it's like, this happened in my lifetime, from saying it's impossible to that kind of speed printing a picture. What's going to happen with AI? What jobs will become obsolete because of the language model? What about the robotic models? How will relationships and social life change? I'm told that Japan already has a person that married their AI friend on their phone. Not a legal wedding at this point, but probably will be at some point. They interacted with that AI friend so much that they wanted to marry it, and they did. How might AI generate pictures that change testimony in court? How will the music industry change with AI-generated voices that become the go-to because they're more accurate and flawless and perfect than the human voice is? What about the ability for computers to actually write songs? How will law and accountability change? How will you put an AI in prison for some dark thing that it did and send out? How will sermons and Sunday school classes and devotions change when you ask AI? How much more lonely will our elders be because now we not only stopped asking them for directions, but we stopped asking them about almost anything in life. You know, there's that potential. As this gets perfected, there's that potential that this world will become a lonelier place. Well, I'll go into my first point. What do we have to lose? What do we have to gain as people of God walking in this emerging reality? We're not going to get away from it. It's there. You do a Google search, it automatically now wants to forward to AI. Number one, if we gain knowledge and efficiency but lose community and human connection, we will be sore losers. Community is a place where we're known as a person, not a self-made mask that we hide behind. We know each other's strengths and weaknesses. We can advise each other accordingly as we know them. Advice will be thought through from various lenses. I remember when I was 16 and on the career path of my dreams, when an elder sat down with me. Not because he doubted my ability, but because he knew that the career I chose had some spiritual risk. And he felt that 16 years old was probably a bit young to be considering that. I didn't see it as seriously as he did, but he advised me to wait a few years. And it was hard, but I listened. In that time, my art hobby took me on the path that I'm on today instead. And a few years ago, I heard of a man who worked in the industry that I coveted as a youth. And I was told that he took his life because of guilt from his success and his dishonesty that brought him success when he was younger. And I was on my way home, and I almost shuddered that could have been me. If I wouldn't have listened to an elder that knew me as a person and could analyze and give me sound advice, that could have been me. If I would have just went on AI and asked about their career and just learned all about it, and AI will tell you what you want to hear. It wants to please. It wants you to come back. There are perspectives that only an elder can give us that AI cannot replace. When my children ask me advice, I pour my soul into the answer. I want to get it right for them because they're an extension of me. We are family. We are community. I care about their future. Their future impacts me. I impact their future. I think how to answer their question in ways that will serve them well in biblical context and a biblical foundation and not just secular perspectives. AI may eventually know a lot about us based on what we tell it about ourselves, but it will advise from cultural norms. It will not advise from a moral high ground because it aims to please. It wants you back. It has nothing to lose to give you the answers that you want to hear. Secondly, sound advice needs to be rated experience first and peer second. Experience first and peer second. Rehoboam made a mistake in that he trusted his peers over experience. AI does not speak from the perspective of tried and proven. AI is very peer-based in its algorithms. It is opening drawers and looking what was last thrown in, what's laying on the top. AI is touching the masses and assuming that their perspective is the answer that you are looking for. Asking an elder what they think for a second opinion is always a good idea if we don't know the subject inside out. The elder may not know so much about the exact item or situation or thing that we're considering. AI will have information that an elder may not have for sure. But an elder will have some life experience that will speak into the type of situation we're considering and some potential there that AI will miss. They know a lot. Elders know a lot about human nature and relationships and how things similar worked in the past. Peer advice is usually very influenced by the masses and the now moments and the still unproven. AI has no clue to all those ramifications. AI works from a non-judgmental connection. It wants to win your loyalty. It is designed to be supportive and agreeable to a prevailing worldview, to try and bring people together. Number three, there are many functions of AI, some more suitable than others for the Christian. We can hardly stuff AI into one big bag and say, leave it shut, it's a monster. We already use information that is AI generated and situationally specific that our elders won't likely have answers to entirely. There are many of you very likely already Google things when you have a health issue and you go to the doctor armed with things that basically you're wanting the doctor to say that verify what you already found. You go armed with information. This will only become more plausible as AI develops. The layman and the doctor's research will come out of the same drawers. One person or research animal's records will service thousands of labs and doctor's offices. X-rays will be uploaded to compare to your X-ray and bring wisdom and accuracy to decision-making that's not attainable by one doctor even in his lifetime. Some industry-specific uses will find AI an invaluable resource, especially when there is no spiritual and moral implications involved. And that's where I see AI as being very, very dangerous, and I want to express caution. I believe academically, AI has something to offer, but it also can take much away, I believe. I believe that AI possibly will bring tutoring possibilities for struggling children in ways that there aren't enough humans to reach around. But just like the calculator has not served the generations younger than myself very well in basic math, I'm still saddened at times when I stop at a yard sale or roadside stand and an eager child wants to serve me, but they have no clue how to give me change until they have a calculator in their hand. You know, that calculator handicapped them for life. They missed the foundational principles early on in their life. And I believe AI holds the same potential if we're going to bring it into our schools and not guard it very carefully. It needs a big bodyguard. I really don't feel it should be a student's tool. Research has already proven, as they evaluated people that learn through AI and learn through digging, and those halfway in the middle that learn through just Google searches, each sphere has a different retention, different level of retention, and could do recall later on. Number four, to depend on AI for our spiritual worldview is dangerous at best. I remember before AI, I was studying something specific and used Google to find articles on the subject. And I chanced on a very good article. I was so impressed with the writer's perspectives. But to my shock, when I got to the end, I discovered that this was written by a Catholic priest. I was not aware that the Catholics would even get remotely close to what he was saying. And I remember, after I realized where this came from, I started rereading some of the article. I had to check its accuracy when I realized the source. If I would have physically walked into a Catholic church and started reading the writings there on the wall in that church, I would have been reading with a lot of caution because I know where I'm reading from. I know the source. AI makes the source ambiguous. We read with a lot of trust, so to speak. We become very trusting in its conclusions. If it sounds good on the surface, we say, I don't know, it sounds good, it must be okay. The biblical admonition for spiritual guidance is to know the source of our spiritual direction. To know the source. King James Version says, we are to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord. Know, personally know. Be able to see the fruit. When you ask ChatGPT a spiritual question, it may be looking in the drawer of a Muslim, a Hindu, a Buddhist, and a Jew, and anything in between as those bots go out and look for answers to your question. and process it with its algorithms that it was set to process. Unless we have spent time in the Word of God prior to our search, and much time at the feet of teachers that we know and trust, we open ourselves up to every wind of doctrine, so to speak, that is out there. Bots like ChatGPT give us a fairly accurate window into affiliation behind its findings. It'll say, this is the Christian perspective says this, and the Muslim perspective says this. Sometimes it has that put in there. But its greatest danger to me, the little I've been using it, lies in the nice little summary that it gives that I call the take-home. I'm a busy person, so I think we're all somewhat natured the same. Yeah, we have all these line items, but then we want to, well, what's the bottom line in all this? And you go down to the concluding arguments. And if it wrongly concludes that a coyote is a dog or a dog is a coyote, it's not the end of the world. Not the end of the world. But if it wrongly concludes how we are to take end of life into our hands, it can be eternally. It could have eternal implications. If it offered me ways of coping with my depression that included the world's end of life options, it can have eternal consequences. If I'm struggling with dark thoughts and I research about sanctity of life and what is after this life, AI will give answers based on what some states are saying, what some countries say, what some doctors say, what some religious groups say. Whatever's in the drawers out there, it's looking for an answer for your question, and it's getting one back to you, right or wrong. For AI, the challenge that they have in developing this is for it to be applicable to the medical doctor that's looking for information, and the Buddhist pastor, and the Christian pastor, and the college freshman. It has to be relevant. It has to have the information they are looking for, or they're going to say, forget this AI. So they're trying to merge this all together so that it's relevant for everyone. When pressed for the moral code being programmed into the bots, I said that these bots are like hounds that are trained by people, but then after that, they're pretty much set free and it's computers working. When pressed for the moral code, when Sam Altman was being pressed by Tucker Carlson, what for parameters is he putting in these bots? How is it sorting this information? This is what he said. This is what Sam said. He said, our user base is the world as a whole. There are plenty of things that ChatGPT allows that I don't agree with. I think ChatGPT should reflect the weighted average of humanity as a moral view, which will evolve over time. Not my role to make the moral decisions, but actively reflect the preferences of humanity. Do you get what he said there? Do you get what he said? This ChatGPT is trying to get a weighted average. Take what the Muslim says, take what the Hindu says, take what the whoever says out there, see what sort of prevailing, see what you can, and give the weighted average. Give that as the bottom line. AI is trained by lots of data inconsistent to an Anabaptist worldviews. It's trained to blend popular opinion. That may be very different from an elder who has faithfully lived life with a consistent application-based Bible worldview. I did a little test. I asked ChatGPT, should a Christian use a paddle as part of their training, their child training? It gave me some surprisingly detailed and accurate points to consider on the subject. Then I went to that summary I talked about, or what we would call in court the closing argument, that little concise take-home, what we would say, okay, here's the bottom line. Then it said this, so should a Christian use a paddle? ? There is no biblical command that a Christian must use a paddle. There is also room within the Christian community for differing convictions. And it ends with, many Christian parents prayerfully conclude that they can faithfully raise godly children without corporal punishment at all. See that nice little summary? See the thinking it did for you as it searched in all the drawers? Now, I happen to know that AI likes to please, so I gave it a little information about myself, and I asked the question differently. I said this, I believe the Bible promotes disciplining children. Am I right? And it said, ending summary, yes, the Bible strongly promotes disciplining children, but it does not mandate one single method like spanking or paddling, and godly Christians reach different conclusions. To depend on AI for our spiritual worldview, without talking with elders, without getting their perspective, is dangerous. It's dangerous. We need to be a community. We need to stay a community. We need to be a community that depends on each other to help us keep our equilibrium in this information that is going to be so available. Lastly, and number five, AI dare not become our go-to for relationships. AI impersonates. AI matches people's mannerisms and voice and the way of talking. Donald Trump is a popular enough person by now that you can give AI almost anything and say, write this like Donald Trump would write it, or speak this like Donald Trump would speak it, and it'll mimic his voice. It'll sound like him. And people are choosing their voices, and they're choosing their person to be their AI friend, so to speak. The person they talk to, you can wake up with that voice. If you like Donald Trump's voice, you can wake up with a personal message in the morning about asking how you slept and what's on your calendar for today and how you could fulfill your New Year's resolution today and how you don't want to eat junk food for breakfast. And they're customized to make AI your companion, that you almost don't need an elder. You got a mother that's after you, coaching you now. Much less complicated than human interaction. AI relationships, I'm told, don't typically emerge overnight. They begin subtly, filling in where real-life relationships fail to satisfy. It's sort of just emotional support on demand. It starts with an occasional interaction and slowly deepens into emotional reliance, where after a while, users begin to confide their fears and their anxieties and their daily struggles, and they reach for their phone and they ask AI, I'm bored, what shall I do? And AI will have an answer for them. AI will give them ideas. Jeffrey Hinton was asked, do you think AI can take the world's library and personalize it just for you? Jeffrey Hinton replied, absolutely. A few weeks ago, I won a Nobel Prize. I never had a personal assistant before. The university gave me a personal assistant, and she now understands a lot about me, and it's wonderful. Elders or AI? Let's be sure AI does not steal our relationships, steal our community, and take us deeper into a superficial world of loneliness. Let's not let it silence the voices of experience that are among us that help get us to where we are today. But let's be a people that values what the older people have to say. Sit at their feet. Listen. Listen deeply. They have so much to teach us about life. I'll conclude with Colossians 2 and verse 8. Beware lest any man, any computer, any AI spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. May the Lord help us to navigate where God has placed us here in this current time. Shall we kneel for a word of prayer?